are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is up, everybody? Happy Friday and welcome into another edition of the Locked On NBA podcast. Thanks for making us your first listen every single day. We are free and available on all platforms. I'm Tony East, the host of Locked On Pacers, filling in for Wes Goldberg today, who is out and unable to go. And Adam Mares, who is also normally here on Friday, also out and unable to go. So with me today from Locked On Lakers, Andy Kamenetsky. The 2000 NBA Finals was Pacers-Lakers. Neither of those teams are good this year. So we're talking about this year's playoffs today.
I remember where I was when the Lakers beat the Pacers in the six-game 2000 Finals. I was bartending at the time at a UCLA bar in Westwood. And it was, I believe, on a Monday night. And I remember this because it was the most money I ever made on a non-weekend night. It was insane. It was like $500 or $600 on a random Monday night because it happened to be the night the Lakers clinched. And, you know, a lot of people believe otherwise, but Laker fans are really there. It's not the fair weather reputation that they often have. They are out there in droves, and they were stoked to see Kobe and Shaq win the first of three.
Meanwhile, when the Pacers lost, I was 5 years old, and probably finishing up a tough day of AM.
All right, Tony, I hate you.
How far we've come since that. Today, we're talking non-finals. Warriors beat the Mavs handily. The game looks close, but I would not say the game was close based on the flow of the game. We'll talk about that game, the Warriors' upcoming finals, who they would prefer to play between Boston and Miami. And at the end, postmortem on the Mavs. What do they need to get this offseason? We'll lean it into our power rankings that we do every Friday. Let's just start general with the game because, Andy, the Warriors dynasty is back. They are finals bound for the fifth time in 7 years. A lot of times in not a lot of years because they just have this playoff experience. Steph did not even play that well. He was 5-for-17, but Kevon Looney was huge. Andrew Wiggins was huge. Klay Thompson was huge. And the Warriors just flexed their playoff experience and got it done.
I will be the first to admit, heading into this season, I did not see this coming. And it's in part because, I think, to be fair to me and anybody who also didn't predict this for Golden State, we hadn't seen what Klay looked like. And until you saw exactly what version of Klay you were getting, knowing how important he had been to the Warriors at their absolute best, you know, he had missed 2.5 years. And it was presumptuous, I think, to just automatically assume he was going to be Klay. And he's not quite Klay yet, but he's better than I thought he would be. And then in the meantime, I didn't expect Andrew Wiggins to be this good. I didn't expect Jordan Peele to be this good. I didn't expect Kevon Looney to be able to really find his niche this way. And then guys like Moody in this series, Kuminga over the course of the season, they've been ahead of schedule and usable. And then you just get back to the fact they're a really cohesive, experienced, very well-coached team that I think they feel like they've been forgotten about and they don't like it.
Yeah, shout out to Steve Kerr if you mentioned coaching for. I mean, this was a brilliant series. Like, to bring in Kevon Looney and be right to do it. Looney was unbelievable in this game. Like, somebody
off freaking Dennis Rodman. He's been incredible.
His rebounds in the fourth quarter, especially in the offensive glass, completely changed the game. Like, I know we're going to talk about the Warriors like they dominated, but like for a second this was a single digit point game late in the third. And Looney in the fourth was like, nah, we're done. You know, he just was scooping them up, and it felt like every single time he got an offensive rebound, the Warriors scored off of it. Like, they were huge plays in that fourth quarter stretch. And Kerr just, the right rotational decisions, got the right guys on the floor outside of a brief stretch late in the third where they looked atrocious. He had a really good series, and he knows how to do this stuff. He's been around the block. They have only lost, I think, two series now with him as a head coach, the finals to the Raptors and the finals to the Cavs. Like, he knows how to do this stuff. It's really impressive what they were able to do in this game, especially considering Steph kind of got hurt in the first quarter, right, rolling his ankle really quick in this game. But they relied on Klay, like you said. I don't think anyone really expected him to be this level of guy already at this point in the season. You don't know what he's been. He hasn't played in forever. 9 threes is his playoff high. He had 8 in this game, was close to breaking it. 32 points, absolutely carried the Warriors. He was hot in the first quarter and never really cooled off. And that was a huge part of this Warriors win, is they got it all the way down from their former stars all the way to the role players. So it's weird to just say like classic Warriors, because they have spent 2 years being just not a good basketball team at all, but they've recaptured that form. I mean, even with Steph getting hurt, even needing to rely on a guy like Kevon Looney. I know we're saying no Otto Porter. That sounds like a joke, but that's like a big crippling thing for them at this point, and they still found a way to get it done. Very impressive and well-deserved finals trip for Golden State.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, just like everybody, I'm a Klay Thompson fan. Everybody likes Klay. He is as popular a high-profile player in the NBA he's impossible to dislike, and I think people love just how comfortable he is in his own skin, how competitive he is, how much he works his ass off on both ends of the court. But also, I'm happy for Michael Thompson, who I worked with for years at 710 ESPN. He's a great guy as well. I know he's thrilled. You also, though, mentioned Steve Kerr and the job that he did, and also the last couple of years with the Warriors. I wonder if the last couple of years have actually benefited Kerr as a coach, because he's had to experiment more and he's had to try things that he wouldn't have had to do before and look for player combinations, look for different skill sets, look for answers that he normally wouldn't have had to, because his team was so good and, you know, they worked off each other so well. There wasn't necessarily the same stuff to figure out. He's had to, I'm not going to say it's easy to do what he did before, because coaching at this level is never easy. You know, and coaching that level of success is never easy, but he's had a different challenge the last couple of years. And I would be very curious to hear from people who watch the Warriors on a daily basis if they feel like he's actually become a better coach. As revered as he already is, it wouldn't surprise me if they feel like that's the case.
Cyrus Ataz, Locked On Warriors, our challenge for you, one segment at least on that, because I would definitely tune in to hear more about that. And I think that's totally a fair point, that, you know, you do grow a lot when you have to kind of think about it and you have a new team. Like, he had to insert a second overall pick into a championship winning team. Like, that kind of changes the way you think, even though
they haven't even gotten anything out of Wiseman.
I know, that's actually kind of an interesting storyline for next season. Like, let's say they win the championship. Even if they don't, how do you suddenly just work this guy back in? Like, your team's already a pretty well-oiled machine.
But he's hard to trade.
Right.
I mean, you know what I mean? Like,
his value will never be lower. So
what you do with him is like you said, on a bunch of different levels. That's a really fascinating question.
So on the Mavs side, look, they were overmatched this whole series. I don't want to pound into him too hard. Credit to them for winning game four. They did look pretty rough in this game, I will say. Luka is Luka Doncic. No one is questioning how good he is. 28-9-6, and I'm still about to dog on him. Took him 28 shots to get there, and there was enough points in this game that it was noteworthy that, like, first of all, mid-third quarter, he had more turnovers than assists, or turnovers than made shots. Excuse me, I just said the wrong stat. He had more turnovers than made shots about midway through the third. Then he went on this awesome run that got the Mavs within single digits, and he was a huge part of that. Like, this game is a 30-point loss without that stretch. But up to that point, he couldn't make anything. He wasn't setting up his teammates at the level he usually does. And the broadcast rightfully noted, he was kind of dogging it, coming back on defense sometimes. Maybe he's hurt, and I think that a lot of guys this late in the playoffs are at least somewhat hurt. But that, you know, this was not like 110% effort, it felt like, from Luka the whole game, even though he still had an insane stat line. So the Mavs, like, need him to do everything. He played the entire second half, so he's going to be tired. I get it. They needed him to do a little bit more in this game. He couldn't quite do it, and they don't have the role guys to make up for when he has an off night.
Well, you know, this gets back to the thing about Luka that always comes up, and this was something that I want to say either Reggie Miller or Kevin Harlan brought up during the broadcast. He may have been, you mentioned, like, dogging it, not putting in that full effort. I don't know for sure, but I agree with them that he looked tired. And what this
That's more
gets,
what I meant, even though I did say the wrong thing.
Right. Dogging it has a connotation like, yeah, you know, not fully invested. And I don't think that's the case. But, you know, conditioning with Luka is always a thing. And, you know, Nikola Jokic went through this for a few years in the NBA before he decided it was no longer going to be a thing. And, you know, Jokic is never going to be, you know, like a shirtless model or anything like that. You know, I mean, he's never going to be yoked or in shape like that. But, you know, he's clearly taken it more seriously the last couple of years. And I think Luka may be realizing, because this is his first deep NBA playoff run, as great as he is, he can't rely just on that skill. You know, there's more to it. And maybe this could be the summer where you really see him commit himself to conditioning like his detractors, and I think even the Mavericks in certain respects have acknowledged he's never really done before.
Yeah, I agree with that. And look, credit to the Mavs for getting to this point. Hell of a postseason run.
I didn't see this coming for them at all.
Yeah, hell of a postseason run. They totally earned it. They're going to be a mainstay in this setting for a long time, as long as 77 is still on their team. But in terms of this specific game and the series ending, their two best offensive scorers, Jalen Brunson and Luka Doncic, took 38 shots and scored 38 points. It's not going to cut it, especially against this Golden State defense that is just, when it's at its best, is just unbelievable. I mean, they're just so hard to score on. They needed one of those guys at least to be better. They only did lose by 10, so I suppose that would have been enough. But both of them really needed to be more effective, and that didn't happen. And, you know, I just mentioned it in passing earlier, but for a team that relies a lot on, you know, I know the buzzword of the NBA is heliocentrism, which is too fancy, but, you know, a lot on one guy. They need their role players to step up around him a lot, and they couldn't get it with those guys having games like that. It didn't even matter if Dorian Finney-Smith goes 6-for-10. It doesn't matter if Dinwiddie is this microwave off the bench. Like, they needed more from the stars in this time, and they didn't get it.
Look, man, it's hard to win at this level. Like, especially when you're not the better team to begin with, your margin for error is really small.
Let's talk about the Warriors' upcoming NBA Finals against either Boston or Miami, both of which would be extremely fascinating series that I would look forward to. Before we do that, Andy, I got to tell everybody about our great partners over at Built Bar who have been asking. We've been asking them for granola flavors, and by God, they delivered. Built granola bars are here. They come in three unbelievable flavors: chocolate peanut butter, chocolate coconut, and white chocolate berry. Want to try all three? You can get a mixed box at built.com too. They're so different from Built bars because they've got the granola loaded right in there, the perfect combination of crunch and chewiness. Just like the bars and the puffs, these babies are packed with protein and covered in 100% real chocolate with 150 calories, 15 grams of protein, and only 4 grams of sugar. Built granola bars will change your world. They have cracked the code to better granola. They're a perfect healthy snack to pack your lunch, take on the road, or eat as a snack. And they're made with collagen protein, which your body absorbs more efficiently and provides a ton of benefits. So if you've been waiting for a healthy and delicious granola bar to hit the market, this is your time. Head to Built.com right now to get the Built granola bars, three delicious flavors to try. And go try them at Built.com. When you check out, use the promo code LOCKED15, LOCKED15. You'll get 15% off your order. That promo code again is LOCKED15 for 15% off at Built.com. Thank you, everybody, for making Locked On NBA your first listen today and every single day. For your second listen, I'm going to recommend either Locked On Pacers or Locked On Lakers, whatever you're feeling more invested in.
I'm going to recommend Locked On Lakers. No equivocation. I'm absolutely recommending Locked On Lakers.
I cannot fault you for doing so. So the Warriors are in the finals. We do not know their opponent yet. The Heat and Celtics will play this weekend and potentially ending of this series. And I think both matchups would be really fun, but I'm curious who you, Andy, think would be a better, who do you think the Warriors would prefer to see opposite them in the finals?
I would think they'd rather see Miami, because as much as Miami has a really good defense, so does Boston. And in the meantime, Boston is so much more potentially explosive than Miami is. They have an easier time generating points from a lot of different spots. They've got two guys in Tatum and Jaylen Brown who can pretty much get their shots wherever they want, however they want. And Miami doesn't really have that. I mean, Jimmy Butler can get his, but he can only really get them in certain spots. He gets a lot of them at the free throw line. And if you're not getting those calls, his effectiveness can be muted some. Bam Adebayo has had these very weird bouts with passiveness. And, you know, Kyle Lowry's not 100%. Tyler Hero is nowhere close to 100%. He can get his own shot, but then you've got the defensive liabilities and issues that come with having him out there. I know Boston is a little bit banged up themselves right now with Marcus Smart and Time Lord, but I think they are overall healthier than Miami seemed to be. And then in the meantime, I just think they're a more balanced team on both sides of the ball. So I would imagine if Golden State had their druthers, they'd rather it be Miami. Either way, they're rooting for Miami to win this game because they want it to go as long as it can.
Yeah, a rare chance for rest for the Warriors if the Heat are able to win game six. They'll have like 5 days off because I think the finals can start the earliest is June 2nd. So that's 6 days off. That would be huge for them, absolutely huge for them. as these playoffs charge on. Like, they could get Otto Porter back. Everybody would be ready to go. Like, Steph just rolled his ankle in this game we just were talking about. You know, getting that fully squared away before the finals would be important. So I'm going to give you a kind of cop-out answer to this question. I think that they have a better chance against the Miami Heat for many of the reasons you just described. I think they'd rather, as humans, play Boston because physical, grinded out series suck to play in. And every time you play the Miami Heat, that's the series you get. That team is shrinking the court like crazy and making it really hard for teams to run their offense or stars to get their stuff. Like, there's a reason all these players who kill the Heat are like Al Horford or, you know, random Bucks role player, you know, whoever. Those are the guys that beat the Heat more often, to me at least, in these playoff settings. Like, I still think the Warriors would win pretty comfortably, and they have such a diverse attack that they can make it happen. But playing the Heat is not fun. And so I think they would like, yeah, I get to play the Celtics. But that's a much harder series
for them. Oh, look, to be clear, I'm not saying the Heat would be a pushover for Miami or for Golden State, or they want Miami. But you asked me to pick between one of these two teams. I only have two choices. It's relative. And Boston can play pretty physical, too. You know, I mean, guys like Marcus Smart, Horford, Robert Williams, you know, Jason Tatum has really come into his own defensively. Jaylen Brown can be a good defender. Like, Derek White is a good defender. Like, they're pretty capable of making your day miserable too.
And the guys that make your day miserable on Boston are more like guardy, wingy defenders that match up better with the Golden State stars or their best players that are initiating the attack. You know, they could throw one of Smart, Brown, Derek White on Steph the entire time he's in the game, right? They could do that. They could do that to Clay too with the other one of those guys.
And that's a really good point too, because Miami doesn't have as many of those guys. Like, they have two really high-end defenders in Butler and Bam, and Kyle Lowry, I think, especially at this time of year, if he's healthy enough, he can be a really annoying, charge-drawing, determined, smart defender. But they play really good team defense. You know, they're really, like any Spoelstra team, very well coached. They all buy into what they're doing. And, you know, a guy like Max Strus has come along a long way defensively. But I still think when you start playing the matchups and looking at the different guys who can individually, beyond whatever you do with a team scheme, make your life difficult for Golden State, I still think the matchup is worse for them with Boston than Miami.
Lowry can be really annoying, but not at his current state, right? I don't think anyone thought that was a good Kyle Lowry in game five. Even though Lowry has beaten the Warriors, he does have the scouting report down. You know, Gabe Vincent and Max Strus can been good in the playoffs, but like not to the threatening point of some of those Celtics guys at the point of attacks. They'd be relying a lot on Victor Oladipo and Jimmy Butler to be.
Yeah, Miami's really banged up right now.
They are. Beneficially for the Warriors, Tyler Hero is one of the banged up guys, and he's been good in the playoffs, but he just gets targeted every second he's in the game. So that is absolutely killer for that Heat team. So I think the Celtics would be the tougher opponent for sure. Like, Al Horford's he's been a huge swing piece this whole postseason for the Celtics. Like, he's able to be such a mismatch problem on both ends of the floor. And I'm really intrigued by how he would fit into this series. Like, do they put Draymond on him? That's a size disadvantage, but that's like the only way to kind of neuter him if you're Golden State. That's a really tough matchup, and the Celtics are so fascinating to me as they grow into this, because I remember a game, Andy, I was at it, because it was in Indianapolis, Celtics Pacers on January 10th, and the Celtics came into that game at 20-21, and now they could be headed to the finals because they have just figured everything out, and that is why they seem so dangerous to me in a final setting. Is like, you know, you can laugh that they're the two seed in the East, but they have been probably the best team in the league, or one of, since that halfway point of the season. They've been unbelievable. They figured out how to get everybody involved. Udoka's defensive system is all the way installed. Like, they're really tough on both ends of the floor. So I think the toughest part for Golden State might be figuring out how to slow down Tatum, because he's just a monster and they don't have like great wing defenders, although Wiggins has done a fantastic job. But the Celtics just in general are clicking on all cylinders, and it's going to be a really tough series if they end up figuring it out.
Now that I think about it, if Boston gets to the finals and they end up winning, it will mean, assuming I'm remembering all this correctly, that Steve Kerr's losses in the finals will only have come against first-time head coaches, because Ty Lue with Cleveland, Nick Nurse, and then Ime Udoka. And Steve Kerr, when he won, was a first-time head coach as well. So if nothing else, it would really, really...
Everybody fire your coach.
Well, I mean, look, there's always that stigma. And, you know, this is something I'm paying close attention to because covering the Lakers, they're in the midst of their, you know, head coaching search. Right. And the Lakers have always seen – they've always presented themselves as a team with rare exceptions. You know, Luke Walton recently, and then you go back to, like, Pat Riley, Paul Westhead, although it wasn't their original plan, like, of, you know, they're not a starter team. You know, this isn't, you know, this is too big a spotlight. It's LA, it's the Lakers, it's the laundry, all that stuff. We're seeing lately a lot of these first time coaches have a lot of really good success. Like, there should not be this stigma around that at all.
From Pacers land, I would like to throw the name Nate Bjorkman into this conversation.
No, look, I brought up Luke Walton. I'm not saying they all work out, but
that's, you know, a good point, though.
You should not be as scared of it, is all I'm saying.
Innovative ideas have been working, and Lou didn't come from the Pop tree, but could be two Popovich tree guys that end up taking down Kerr in the finals as well. I am looking forward to whoever plays the Warriors. I think both the Heat and the Celtics could give them trouble with the way they play. And they're both just so strong defensively. And the Mavs were too. But I think both the Heat and Celtics are stronger on that end of the floor. Could be a good finals. Let's get the Mavs the proper send-off and post-mortem because their season was special. They made the conference finals. But I'd also like to read a tweet from Seth Partnow as we talk about the Mavs and power rank their biggest needs this offseason. Thank you, everybody, as always, for making Lockdown NBA your first listen today and every single day. Hop on over to Lockdown NBA Big Board for your second listen. Learn more about all the NBA draft prospects. Those guys are traveling, going to workouts. They are everywhere, and they have got all the details on these draft prospects in the NBA draft that you need to know. The Mavs season is over. Great season for them. Conference finals trip, exceeded expectations. Luka, first-team All-NBA again, 3 times in his first 4 years. Unbelievably good player. Seth Partnow, who worked in the front office for the Bucks for a long time, tweeted this about the Hawks last year and is now tweeting it about the Mavericks, and I find it very fascinating. In the context of the NBA, his tweet reads, "My yearly tweet about the team which unexpectedly makes the conference finals, the Mavs have to remember the next year they start from zero and they have to earn their way back to this point rather than assume it. Extremely well said, especially as the Hawks totally fizzled out and died this year. Barely even snuck into the playoffs, did not look great against the Heat, took a buzzer beater from Trey to even win one playoff game. I think that's key for the Mavs to remember. That said, I don't think Luka is going to let them keel over and die next year. What do you think about that?"
No, I would imagine that Luka has gotten a taste of this and really likes it. And, you know, this is a big monkey he's gotten off his back because people have paid attention to these first round flameouts. And I don't think they've really been Luka's fault. If anything,
no.
He's given the team that's beaten him a lot of problems. But it doesn't change the fact that people have wondered, you know, are the defensive liabilities too much of a problem? We've seen him get targeted in these playoffs. You know, the conditioning issues that we talked about before, is he dedicated enough? Does he let the referees bother him too much? All of these different things. Like once you are a superstar, you know, and in the rings culture that we live in now, we put superstars under an incredibly sharp and I think often unfair microscope. You know, Luka's there right now. You know, everybody ends up in the barrel. And I think he's really shown a lot in these playoffs. And hopefully he's the kind of guy, and he is, by all accounts, super competitive. Somebody that recognizes, like, okay, I've gotten pretty close. I want to get over that hump. You know, I want to reach that next round. I want to figure out what is needed of me to do that as a franchise face, you know, as a young guy that's taking the mantle from Dirk Nowitzki. What's needed of me? How do I go about doing that? And then how do I hold everybody else accountable in a way that they respond to well?
Yeah, I agree. I think he's had the mentality his whole career that's been the right mentality for a player of his status and skill. And now that he's gotten this far, right, the expectation is there. That's the harder part. But I think he's got, again, the mentality and the brain power to get past this and help the Mavs get past it. That said, they did not necessarily have the roster. There's a reason we've been talking about them as a surprise conference finalist, right? They're not a bad team. They're a top four team in the West, But a conference finalist, very few expected that. Their win over Phoenix was extremely impressive. Let's power rank, let's say three. The top three things we think the Mavs need. And I will go first with the most boring answer of all time. They need a center. And I don't mean that to be rude to any of their centers. Maxi Kleba had an awesome playoffs. His shooting won them some games. His defense was good. Dwight Powell started in their elimination game and played 7 minutes and 27 seconds. Here's some stats for you. In the regular season, they were 24th in rebounds per game. In the playoffs, there are 16 teams. The Mavs ranked 15th in rebounds per game, despite being a very good defensive team. They are forcing misses. They just don't grab them very well. I don't even necessarily think they need a big man who like plays a lot. They just need like screen dive rebound big man. And that's like a simple guy to get in the current landscape of the NBA. And I think they need one.
A JaVale McGee type. Is that what you're talking about?
Exactly.
Teams have recently come to realize JaVale's a really useful guy to have around. My number three, get Tim Hardaway Jr. back.
Yeah.
You know, this is a series where you realize they could have used another guy who is not just capable of getting his own shot, but like really capable of going off. Like Tim Hardaway Jr. has had these nights where he can really put up some big numbers, maybe not as consistently as you'd like, but in the playoffs, like over a 7-game series, if he can have one of those nights, can be the difference between advancing and going home. And I think he's somebody that could take a pretty good burden off Luka in certain respects. So I hopefully next season, a full year of Tim Hardaway Jr., maybe that in and of itself becomes the equivalent of a significant free agent addition.
Yeah, to your point, like Al Horford had a huge game in Milwaukee and the Celtics win. And they take that series in 7 games. Do they win that series if Al Horford doesn't have 30-something points in game 4? Maybe not, right? And like Tim Hardaway can be that level of, you know, he has a big outburst kind of game. Boom, the Mavs just get a win. And they don't have to rely on Luka as much. That's very important. And that kind of bleeds into what I have as my number two big need for the Mavs this summer. Wings. Wing depth. Their wings aren't bad. Reggie Bullock's a good player. They were starting him for a reason. He had some nice games this playoffs. He also had some stinker of games this playoffs. Dorian Finney-Smith is a very nice player. I think every single team in the NBA would like to have Dorian Finney-Smith. After that, in the postseason, they kind of got nobody in terms of wing-sized dudes. Everybody either fits more into the big man box or the guard box. And they can kind of get away with playing them on the wing, but not very well. So Tim Hardaway will fit into that role. But I think, look, in the NBA in general, you always want more of these, you know, 6'7" switchable guys, and they need more of them.
My number two would be at least defensive neutral, if not plus defender guard, that you could play, if not starting alongside Luka, somebody that you can plug in alongside them. Because right now, their other main guards, Jalen Brunson or Spencer Dinwiddie, they are really, really useful offensive players. And it's going to be very interesting to see what happens with Jalen Brunson this offseason as far as his contract. But both of them are targetable defensively.
Yeah.
And then when you combine that with Luka, who teams went out of their way to target, if for no other reason than to try to tire him out, you know, beyond the fact that he's not a great defender himself, it's difficult to succeed, you know, even as far as the Mavericks did, with an entire backcourt that you can target. I think it makes running defensive schemes really difficult. Finney-Smith and Reggie Bullock did, I think, very, very good work bolstering that defense. And Jason Kidd, who I was really skeptical about for Dallas, clearly got them to buy into a team concept. But I think it would help if they had a useful defensive guard.
Yeah, Maxi Kleba had a good defensive postseason. But part of it's because he's asked to do a lot because their guards need him to rotate over and be a disruptor on the defensive end. And look, if you could get away with the schemes that they had, and they did. They did not. Again, Jason Kidd did a wonderful job getting guys in the right position to succeed defensively, even with limitations. Great. But if you don't have to give up something else to guard action A, that's even better. And so having better defenders at the point of attack would definitely help them. I don't know if your number one answer is the lazy answer. My number one answer is the lazy answer. A star, a second star. Every team could use more of these. The Mavs tried it. Like, I think the Porzingis trade was a totally worthy gamble for the Dallas Mavericks when they did it. Like, get a second. He's young and available, all-star level player at the time, right? That's a worthy gamble for a team that has Luka Doncic on their roster. It didn't work. And they did a great job pivoting out to Dinwiddie and Bertans this year. Those two guys helped them quite a bit. But getting another just dude, like another really damn good player, like they've got a lot of ammo to do it. They've got all their own picks basically now. I think the last one to the Knicks is this year. Next year, they basically have all their own picks. They've got Josh Green, some other young stuff. Like it's getting to that time where Luka's good enough that you got to do it at some point. I think they just need another star, another dude. And that, like every team can say that, but once you get to the conference finals, like it's time to start looking for that guy.
Yeah, the model that they had with Luka as one of the five best players in the league and a solid supporting cast, they performed about as well as they possibly could. But you're right, that's a lot on Luka. I give Dallas a lot of credit for admitting that the trade didn't work because the two of them did not fit together at all. A lot of teams would have too much pride to admit that they made a move that didn't work. Dallas, to their credit, just said, we're not going to keep this going. It clearly doesn't. My number one, I alluded to this earlier, Tony, just Luka really dedicating himself to that conditioning, but also just becoming at least a neutral defender. Like, I don't think it's necessary for Luka to be a true two-way star. It'd be awesome if he was, but he doesn't have to be, especially with the offensive load that he carries and generates and all that stuff. But he needs to become less of a liability. And I think, if nothing else, he's got the size and the strength that I think if he dedicates himself to just becoming an average defender, like somebody who's just not a flat liability out there, that in and of itself will take Dallas to another level.
Say what you want about Steph Curry's defense, but he worked on it a lot.
Yeah.
As part of the Warriors' ascent, and that was a big part of them getting better. It's like, even in this series, he was scramming out to Luka and pick and rolls, then recovering to whatever guy was rolling. Like, he played really good defense.
Here's, can do that. That helps. Here's the other thing, too. It's not just Luka becoming better defensively individually. When your star player, you see him working, even when you know he's not great at it, but you see him doing everything that he's supposed to be doing, it makes it easier for him to hold other people accountable defensively. Even if they know he's not a great defender, they know he's putting in the work. They know he's doing the stuff he's supposed to be doing. They know he cares.
That's absolutely right. I'll be fascinated to see how they handle this because Seth Partnow is absolutely right. Like, this is a hard position to be in. Losing in the conference finals is hard. It ended the Thunders, whatever you want to call it. Not a dynasty. They only made one finals. But, you know, they lose in the conference finals. Suddenly they shake it up. Like, it can be really tough to recover from that position. So the Mavs and their new coach and their new front office will have to figure out how to do it. Andy Kamenetsky, thank you for talking with me today. Love talking about basketball.
Absolutely,
man. Thank you. Where can people follow you and all your stuff with Locked On Lakers?
Follow us, my brother and I, at Cam Brothers, K-A-M Brothers, on Twitter. The YouTube channel for Locked On Lakers is very lively. We often include comments in our show, particularly now when there's nothing going on. We love your inspiration that you provide for us. So that's the main place to follow us.
The Lakers is a circus that never ends. So if people need to see more about the circus, that is the way to go. Not a circus, the Pacers, if you want more from Indiana Land at T East NBA, is the way to go there. And Locked On Pacers on YouTube is the way to go. I am less commenty than you. I've got to be better about that and engaging with people. Thank you all for listening to Locked On NBA today. Next week, depending on what happens this weekend, they'll either be previewing the finals or talk about an upcoming Game 7 between Boston and Miami. You won't want to miss it. Everybody have a great weekend, and we will see you on Monday.